Good morning.
Good morning,
and greetings from the program in Christian Spirituality at San Francisco Theological Seminary. It's so good to be with you here this morning, and I have to tell you, this is my first time in the sanctuary, and what a blessing this is to me to be here and to be blessed by the beauty of the music that we've heard and sung, to be blessed by the beauty of this very sacred space, and to be here worshiping with you. Please pray with me. Gracious God, in our worship, may you create in us a new awareness of your living word for us. Amen. In Romans 8, verse 22, the Apostle Paul writes, "For we know that all creation has been groaning together as in the pains of labor until now." All creation groaning. On Sunday, June 27, 2010, I can't hear that phrase, "all creation groaning," and not think of the Gulf of Mexico and of the oil that continues to pour out from the deep water horizon oil hemorrhage. The Gulf groans. The beaches groan, the fish groan, the turtles groan, the birds groan. We groan for over 2 months now, a groan we can't stifle, a groan we can't silence, a groan we can't fix. So this morning, I want to think some and talk some about the spirituality of this moment in our shared history. In this moment, where and how are we experiencing, or how can we experience God in this great groaning? This morning, I want us to think for a bit about this question. How do we experience God in creation when we stand in the midst of creation and see the mess we have made and join together in one great groan? Now, the two scriptures this morning offer us two very glimpses of how humankind experiences God in the midst of creation. The first reading, Psalm 19, flows out of an ancient and deep tradition of how women and men have approached the vastness of creation and there have encountered something of God, of the transcendence of the majesty of God. In Psalm 19, we stand in the midst of creation, and it speaks to us of the creative and sustaining power of God. The heavens are telling of the glory of God, and the skies proclaim God's handiwork. Day to day, they pour forth speech. Night to night, they declare knowledge. Their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In Psalm 19, our experience of creation communicates to us something of the glory of God. For me, in the past few years, I experienced something like this in the sight of Mount Tam near my home, sometimes regal, sometimes moody, always sitting there solidly present. Maybe you have a place or an experience like that, the ocean. A walk through the redwoods, this place, a grand canyon, a snowy mountain in ski season, the view of the bay when you crest the hill on Fillmore or Divisadero. A moment that stops us in the midst of life with a deep experience of God's creative work. I hope this experience is fairly common. I bet that many of us have friends who don't claim any religion, but who tell us that what they experience out in nature, when they're out there, they experience something bigger than themselves. As Gerard Manley Hopkins wrote, "The world is charged with the grandeur of God." This is a deep stream of spirituality within the Jewish and the Christian traditions. One example among Christian traditions is the Celtic spirituality of Ireland and Scotland. This past fall, I had the opportunity to go and spend some time with the Iona community in Scotland. The Iona community is an international ecumenical Christian community. They have a special gospel concern for peace, justice, and the integrity of all creation. At Iona, and as a core principle of their social activism, they talk of a Christian spirituality that looks for God in all things, and particularly in the created world. They say that as we look at the world around us, we can glimpse signs of the presence of God's life in and among us. They talk of this as listening for the heartbeat of God in all things. We encounter the vast stretch of creation or the remarkable detail of a particular life, and we listen there for the heartbeat of God. Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim God's handiwork. But in this Romans text, Romans 8, as we approach creation and listen for the heartbeat of God, creation groans. All creation groans loudly. In the Greek, this isn't a casual groaning like how you'd groan if I told a really bad joke. Not like that. No, in the Romans passage, it is a full body, up from your belly, can't control it groan, a groan that comes from deep within, from the depths of life itself. It is a groan that, as Paul says, is too profound, too deep, even for words. What do we do when we go out into the world, into the midst of creation, to experience the holy, and all we hear is groaning? What do we do when we go to hear the heartbeat of God and all we hear is the groaning of God, the groaning of all creation? Which brings us back to the groaning of the Gulf. For the past 2 months, we've been flooded with images from the oil-soaked Gulf. And for me, some of those images are particularly haunting because those are beaches that I know. I've lived 20 of my 42 years in Alabama and 4 years on the Gulf Coast of Florida, just a couple of miles from the beach. What do we do with these images? There's the constant image of oil gushing out of the Gulf floor, which you can watch live on any number of websites, over 80 million gallons as of yesterday. Then there's this image that we've heard of, but it's really too big to see, of giant oil plumes wafting across the depth of the Gulf. Then there are the images of those bewildered beachgoers in their bathing suits walking around the Gulf beaches and gathering and staring down at these odd globs of oil that are washing up. But most poignantly for me, there are the images of the brown pelicans that are native to the Gulf Coast. Up until a year ago, the brown pelican was on the endangered species. We'd almost killed them off with DDT. And just last year, the pelicans had recovered to the point of being taken off the endangered species list. And now, no matter what news source we go to, there are these pictures of pelicans grounded on the beach, covered with a thick coat of chocolate brown oil, unable to move, unable to fly, unable to return to their nest to care for their young. In the language of Romans, creation groans. Creation groans in groans too deep for words. Creation groans subjected to futility. Creation groans longing for freedom from its bondage to decay. What do we do? What do we do when we go out into the world, into the midst of creation, to a beautiful white sand beach to experience the holy, and the waves spit back at us globs of the oil that we continue to dump into the Gulf? What do we do? Romans 8 echoes this great groan. And it says something more. And I want to notice this morning just a few things. The first thing is this. As creation groans in Romans 8, creation does not groan alone. Creation groans. and we groan. We groan inwardly, awaiting the redemption of our bodies. And God groans. In Romans 8, in all this groaning, when we don't even know what to pray, God's Spirit comes alongside us and prays with us in groans too deep for words. There is in this text a community of groaning. It's an unusual image, but here it is. All of us drawn together, bound up together in this common experience of groaning. God, us, all creation, a community of groaning. And that leads us to the second thing. Romans 8 calls us to see and to experience the rest of creation as a co-groaner. Romans 8 challenges us to rethink or reimagine how we understand creation and our relationship to the rest of creation. Now, historically, and unfortunately, over the centuries, many Christian thinkers have thought of creation in terms of dominion. They've gone back to Genesis 1 and have clung to words to the first humans in that story, subdue the earth. This dominion thinking still persists, but across many Christian traditions, for many people, this has evolved into the notion of stewardship. And this is how I was raised to think of creation. In the garden and afterwards, we are entrusted with care of the earth. We have a fiduciary duty to care for that which we have been entrusted. We are stewards, caretakers of creation. And I don't think that this notion of stewardship is particularly bad, but this Romans text is pushing us even further. Both dominion and stewardship theologies look at creation as an object. In one, creation is an object to be ruled and governed, its resources marshaled and used for the benefit of the one who has dominion. In the other, creation is an object to be tended, an object of trust to be cared for and nurtured, but still ultimately to be cared for our benefit and continued use. But here in Romans 8, we don't see a subject-object relationship, humans over and against creation. In Romans 8, all creation is subject. Creation has its own agency. Creation has its own voice. Creation has its own groan. In Romans 8, creation is a full participant in the saving action of God. In Romans 8, we no longer see creation as an object, either of our dominion or of our care. In Romans 8, we have to acknowledge creation as a co-groaner, a co-sufferer. Romans 8 calls us to reimagine our life with the rest of creation in relational terms. And if we think of ourselves as living in relationship with the rest of creation as co-groaners and co-sufferers, our response to the groaning of creation is no longer just a matter of coming up with a one-time fix to a very bad mess that we have made. It becomes a matter of restoring right relationship over the long haul of our life together. It becomes a matter of reconciliation, of recognizing the full dignity of the other, of naming and confessing the impact of our actions on the other, and of changing our behavior, both individually and systemically, so that we don't repeat this harm again and again. One of the most startling things to me in this whole oil spill has been the call to resume drilling as soon as we can. It is a bizarre and troubling sign of the depth of our addiction to oil. If we are to be about the work of reconciliation, we can't persist in the ways we continue to harm each other. We can't go on drilling like we've been drilling. We can't go on consuming oil like we've been consuming oil. We are called to a fundamental transformation of the way we live together. And that brings us to the third thing. In Romans 8, in all this groaning, in this community of groaning, in this transformed relationship with all of creation, there is hope. Hope for something more. And if we don't name it now, it might get lost in all this groaning. In Romans 8, creation isn't just groaning in its suffering, it is groaning in hope, in eager longing to be set free. In Romans 8, we aren't just groaning in our suffering, we are groaning in hope for the redemption of ourselves and for all creation. And in Romans 8, God's own Spirit groans with us in groans too deep for words in hope. In Romans 8, the groaning that we hear is the groaning into new life. It is, quite specifically, the groaning of birth, the groaning of one in labor. Romans 22, verse 8, "For we know that all creation has been groaning together as in the pains of labor until now. The God who groans with all creation is the God who is birthing creation into new life. God is inviting us out of our shared suffering and our death-dealing ways and into the shared work of transforming all that is into something new." The groaning that we hear in Romans 8, us, all creation, God, is a recognition of present suffering. And it is a groan of longing for some new life, a longing for a better day. It is the groaning of the community of all creation, accompanied by the God who created us and has not left us. It is the groaning of the community of all creation, accompanied by the God who cries out from the cross and groans us through death and into resurrection. As I've listened to these news stories from the Gulf, every day, all the time, one has particularly stood out. I heard an interview with Melanie Driscoll, who is doing work cleaning up birds on the Gulf. She says that the hardest part of her work is watching the birds who haven't been affected yet, just flying around and going about their daily life as if nothing is wrong, courting, nesting, caring for their young, not knowing that when they plunge into the water to get their food, they'll be covered with oil. Melanie is groaning with all creation. And so she works on the beach and she cleans up these birds. She groans and she works for a new day when those birds can plunge into clean water. I want to go back to our original question. How do we experience God in creation when we stand in the midst of creation and see the mess that we have made and join together in one great groan? In Psalm 19, we experience the transcendence of God, the vastness, the awesomeness of God and God's creation. And here in Romans 8, we experience the imminence of God, the intimate presence of God with us right here, right now. We experience God as one who suffers with all creation. We experience God in a community of groaning in the community of all creation. We experience God in the grace and dignity and hard work of transformed relationship of reconciliation. And we experience God in the hope of new life. In Romans 8, and even now, God groans all creation together into new life. Earlier, I mentioned the Gerard Manley Hopkins poem, The Grandeur of God. Hopkins wrote it in the midst of the Industrial Revolution of the 1800s as he pondered some of the same questions that we are asking this morning. The world is charged with the grandeur of God. It will flame out like shining from shook foil. It gathers to a greatness like the ooze of oil crushed. Why do men then not wreck his rod? Generations have trod, have trod, have trod, and all is seared with trade, bleared, smeared with toil, and wears man's smudge and shares man's smell. The soil is bare now, nor can foot feel being shod. And for all this, nature is never spent. There lives the dearest freshness deep down things. And though the last lights off the black west went, O morning, at the brown brink eastward springs, because the Holy Ghost over the bent world broods with warm breast and with, bright wings.